Trump has said that America is going to be the number one crypto capital of the world. We've seen a complete shift in the SEC. I would say that Bitcoin is the only thing that matters.
UK government continues its tyrannical march. Looks like they're trying to get the big tech companies to censor Americans so that no one's feelings are hurt in their country.
They've got the ID component over here, and now they're doing the stable coins over here. And eventually they're all going to collide, where you've got the payment system, you've got the monitoring, you've got the software, and you've got the switch, right?
We're getting pretty close to the end game. Yes, it's a few years away, but I think what you stack today is going to be meaningfully more valuable before the end of this decade.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I have Greer and Adam Semeca has joined us today. Gents, let's jump right in. So just in from the SEC chair, Paul Atkins, he confirms that crypto innovation exemptions are coming in January. And the post is a quote tweet from Sitebringer. And he says, this is the United States conceding defeat in the war against crypto. I would love to hear, Greer, you take this one first. Do you think this is the U.S. conceding defeat in the war against crypto?
Hey, we've got the crypto president, right? Trump has said that America is going to be the number one crypto capital of the world. So, you know, get in line, line up and start following his direction. You know, we've seen a complete shift in the SEC. I would say that Bitcoin is the only thing that matters in the crypto space and should not even be lumped in with all the other shitcoins. But I think that it's time to figure out where the energy is, and that's in Bitcoin. It can't be stopped. It can't be killed. It can't be turned off. And the crypto ecosystem at large is really just one giant distraction. You know, Bitcoin is the signal. Look at Trump's own purchases. He purchased millions of dollars recently. And I think for any individual, you should be focused on, you know, how much Bitcoin do you have today? Always trying to get a little bit more than you did last week. And wait this out. You know, this price action we're seeing is just an absolute gift if you're a sat stacker. So focus on the signal. Everyone wants Bitcoin, and crypto is the way they keep you from focusing on that.
Adam, what do you think?
I don't think governments concede defeat. I think it's more misdirection than anything. I think this is what we're seeing, you know, play out is the government trying to control Bitcoin, and they want to use it for their own power. It's, you know, I think Bitcoin to a government is kind of like the ring of power, right? You think you can control it and use it for good, but it ends up destroying you either way. So I think that's ultimately what's going to happen is, you know, the government's going to try to use this thing and harness the power of it, you know, with all these centralized products and all the the ETFs and the paper Bitcoin companies, if you will, and also with the strategic Bitcoin reserve. I don't think it's going to work out how they think it's going to work out in the long run, but I'm perfectly happy with letting them go along for that ride for the time being. But I think in the end, Bitcoin is not something that can be, you know, controlled in the same way that a fiat currency can. So I think Bitcoin does win in the end, but I think for the time being, we're going to see all these governments and national powers trying to wield Bitcoin in a similar way that they have been with their central banks. I think it's going to end catastrophically for a lot of people, governments, right? Not necessarily Bitcoiners, but I think that it's going to be a rude awakening when they find out that that once they've opened Pandora's box and allowed this freedom go up technology to their citizens, there's not any going back from that. So I think there's a silver lining to it. I think there's a light at the end of the tunnel. But I think the government, United States, other governments as well, are simply just trying to control this thing and impose the same level of control that they have been historically speaking.
Yeah, I think you guys know I'm pretty cynical when it comes to government. And I think an important reminder is that government isn't a thing. It's a bunch of people and it's a revolving door of people. And the fact that you might have an administration who throws you a bone and acts, you know, favorably toward your pet project or whatever it is that you like, doesn't mean that new people aren't going to replace those folks, you know, a few years from now. So I think it'd be prudent for Bitcoiners to assume that we're in the fight you stage until it is so clearly evident that we are beyond that. And I don't think we're there yet. I would just assume, governments aren't going to claim defeat. And I think we're probably at a point where the best thing, government winning, would be for Bitcoin to just be like digital gold and to sit in people's vaults and, you know, never be used as a currency, as a medium of exchange. I don't know if they think that's them winning or not, but I have a feeling that would be their the best case outcome for them, the worst case outcome for us as Bitcoiners who want a better world. So we'll see. I'll be interested to see what the news is in January. I'm sure we'll be here talking about it. Okay, up next, let's watch this video real quick.
Add one more thing on the Online Safety Act. And I emphasized this earlier, but I want to say it again. It's misguided and unfortunate to apply that law in Britain, but applying that law extraterritorially, which means applying it to speech that has nothing to do with Britain, does not occur in Britain, is on American platforms by American users on American political issues, purporting to censor Americans in America is a deal breaker. It is a non-starter. It is a red line. And that's what Ofcom has tried to do with the Online Safety Act, and that's one reason the American government is concerned.
Okay, but will your government then take legal action against Ofcom if they try and overreach in the way you've described?
Well, there's already formal action proposed. There is a bill before the House called the Granite Act that would amend an existing statute to clarify that as a matter of American public policy, any penalties imposed by Ofcom are unenforceable against American companies. So our legislature will likely consider that, and we'll certainly consider other options if indeed the British government insists upon trying to nullify the First Amendment on American soil with respect to American companies.
All righty. So the UK government continues its tyrannical march. And looks like they're trying to get the big tech companies, U.S.-based companies predominantly, to censor Americans so that, you know, no one's feelings are hurt in their country. Adam, take this one first, man. What do you think?
Well, I saw a bit of news that's coming out today where this has already started. And we were talking a little bit about it before the show started. But apparently the EU has fired a 120 million euro warning at X. So they're basically fining them 120 million euros for it. And I'm going to word this how JD Vance words it. So JD Vance said, it is a fine for not engaging in censorship. And I think that that's a good example and description of exactly what's happening. I don't think we should stand for it. You know, we're Americans, we have our rights, and our American companies should not be subject to another country's, you know, censorship desires. So we have the right to free speech here in this country, and I'm going to partake in that as much as I can.
Greer, what do you think?
Yeah, the redcoats are coming, right? It's time to, you know, call the villagers. And, you know, this instance, I think, it's just laughable. The UK is looking to censor Americans by fining these different platforms. I'm glad to see that there's some state representatives who are pushing back on this and saying, you know, the Granite Act, which they're considering, is one way that they can protect us. But ultimately, I think that any platform that engages in censorship is really doing harm to its users. You know, look at America right now. We have the largest amount of hash rate. We have the largest amount of Bitcoin in our country, and the highest number of Bitcoiners. You know, that's one thing that we don't really talk about a lot. And maybe you'd say that America has too much Bitcoin at the moment. But I think that Bitcoin will control the future. So good luck trying to control a government and a country and its people who have the world's hardest money. I think instead of censoring people, I mean, let's ask ourselves, what are they afraid of? Us telling the truth, of us making memes and laughing at things? You know, this is free speech, whether you like it or not. And I think if you want to compete on the world stage, you have to have the world's hardest money. And I think the UK is losing that game. What they ought to do, as you know, what they call themselves the birthplace of freedom, is really remember those ideals. They should be protecting their country. They should be protecting their citizens and really advocating for freedom. And instead, they're doing the opposite.
I agree. And I'm sorry, guys, I can't let it go. But just as a reminder, we do not have free speech because we're Americans or because we're a part of a country. We have free speech because we are human beings created in the image of God and have natural rights. Mm-hmm. All righty. Up next, we've got starting December 10th. Speaking of all these lovely Western countries, starting December 10th, all social media platforms in Australia will be required to verify users' ages before allowing access. We've talked about this. Adam, I don't think we've had you on the show when we've talked about it, but the digital ID crackdown basically is our anticipation. Why don't you give your thoughts on what's happening in Australia?
Yeah, I'm not privy to the exact situation in Australia. Obviously, I live in the U.S. and don't care too much about politics elsewhere, but I do pay attention to the idea of central bank digital currencies and social credit score systems, as I think it's becoming clear that the world as a whole is trending that direction. And this is just playing into that, right? This is just another piece, shifting the Overton window just a little bit to get people comfortable and familiar with social credit and control, right? This isn't new. This is something that, you know, even as an American citizen, we've been exposed to over time, whether it's, you know, social security numbers, driver's license, you know, different forms of ID, the real ID stuff that's rolling out in the U.S. now. And they're just laying out all the pieces required for a CBDC. And right now they're all disparate, meaning they're all kind of in individual little silos. You know, they've got the ID component over here, and now they're doing the stable coins over here. And eventually they're all going to collide where you've got the payment system, you've got the monitoring, you've got the software, and you've got the switch, right? And once you have all those together, then you have this totalitarian social credit score system, which is, you know, essentially the mark of the beast, I think, at that point, where you can just turn somebody off from whatever you want to, and you have full control over everybody's agency and their autonomy. So we should push back on things like this as much as possible. I have no say over what happens in other countries, but in the United States, I'll say that if you're a U.S. citizen, you should absolutely be pushing back in every way possible on every inch that they try to take from our liberties.
Greer, I know you're probably tired of talking about this one at this point in time, but do you have anything you'd add?
It looks like if you're a parent and allow your kid to use your social media accounts, or if you use your credentials and allow them to access it, that you'll face some either heavy fines or even being deplatformed. I think the bright spot is technology can be used to enforce these things, but there's also a way out. If I was in Australia, I would start learning about Nostr and download Primal app. I'd look at getting a privacy phone, a Google Pixel, and install something like Graphene OS, and start thinking about how can I make my communications and my social media platforms that I use decentralized and independent from this type of overreach. As we've seen in some countries around the world, when the Zoomers take over, they use things like BitChat and start using Bluetooth mesh networks to communicate with each other, things that can't be stopped. So I'm hopeful that we'll see a rise in some of these alternative open source tools. It remains to be seen, but this is not all bad. There's always a glimmer of hope. And I truly believe, you know, life will find a way. But I think if I was in Australia, I would be doing everything I could to push back against this.
Yeah, I think this is going to propel some of these decentralized technologies to the forefront. And once again, government will shoot themselves in the foot. Okay, we've got Elon Musk saying that AI will end America's debt crisis within 3 years. And it makes me wonder what the whole Doge charade was about. Maybe he just came up with this idea. I don't know. Greer, do you think America's debt crisis is over because of AI soon?
Let's see the poly market on this one. I am highly suspect that, you know, I mean, our debt is $38 trillion and unfunded liabilities are another $120 trillion. You know, we looked at a headline that even OpenAI is set to lose $500 billion per year, supposedly. So I think the earnings from AI have yet to be seen. And the benefits, I think, are really just kind of making people unemployed and obsoleting jobs by the thousands. So will it pay down our debt? I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to be one to bet against Elon. He is obviously made a name for himself and what he's able to create. So I think I'll couch a little bit of my skepticism, but I'll also keep a little bit of cynicism as well.
Up next, I think Elon's going to say, hey, couldn't we just print 38 $1 trillion coins and just pay off our debt like that? I don't know. We'll see if that we circle back to that conversation at some point. Adam, what do you think?
I don't know how it's possible that he could even believe this. I don't think anybody thinks that this is true. I don't think he thinks this is true. I will say, though, I could think of like maybe a scenario where this might have some truth, and that is I think the growth of AI will lead to a parallel growth of Bitcoin infrastructure. So with that, I think that it's possible that, you know, one could lead to the other. And I do think that Bitcoin in some way will end the debt crisis for Americans, in the sense that if you opt into the Bitcoin debit-based system and opt out of the credit-based fractional reserve system, there is no longer a debt crisis, right? You can opt out of that fiat system. So, you know, if you replace the word AI with Bitcoin, I think that this is true. And so maybe this is just some sly roundabout way of saying that Bitcoin is going to end the debt crisis. It's obviously not going to end the debt crisis for the government, but it can end the debt crisis for you, and you can opt out at any time. So that's the way I'm spinning it.
Well said. Alrighty, up next, Porsche just bricked thousands of Russian-registered and internet-connected vehicles overnight. Engines dead, electronics locked out, no warning. And the speculation here is that the German automaker acted on EU orders. Porsche isn't denying it. So you got to be careful with your smart cars, your smart cameras, your smart everything. You might look pretty stupid if you get caught up in these. Adam, take this one first.
This kind of goes to what I was talking about earlier with governments just trying to control every aspect of your life, and they want to switch on everything. And, you know, Porsche did this in Russia. I know that it's been presented to Elon Musk and Tesla as well. I don't think that they've ever done anything like that, but I know that Elon Musk has addressed it in the past, which means it's possible. And the fact that it's possible is a huge issue, in my opinion. So one of the reasons that I'm concerned about it is there's been some legislation in the United States that's been pending for a while. I'm not sure if it's progressed recently. I haven't checked on it, but a few years ago, it was supposed to roll out, I think, in 2025. It may have gotten pushed back. I don't know. Trump may have also done something in an executive order on it, but there was legislation to install driver-facing cameras in every vehicle and have an automatic cutoff switch for law enforcement on every vehicle produced after, you know, whatever date. Like I said, I think it was originally going to be at some year, then it was 2025. And then now I don't know if it's happening at all, but this is just going back to the point that when we give up these freedoms and these liberties that we don't even realize we're giving up, we're building this system for the, you know, the authoritarians in our world. And, you know, maybe there's some people that mean well by it, or they don't quite understand what the trouble is or the danger is, but we're building the ground layer for CBDCs, the social credit for governments all over the world and in the US. So again, just one of those cases where we need to push back and not allow our auto manufacturers to, we shouldn't buy products that the manufacturer can turn off on us, right? We should opt into products that give us more agency and sovereignty. So it's just something that I'm concerned about and I don't think is really trending in the right direction right now.
Yeah, if the government is your counterparty risk, you need to find a new place to assign it, because eventually they're going to leverage the tools at their disposal. Greer, what do you think about Porsche bricking a bunch of cars?
Absolute warfare. I mean, the assumption that anyone who drives a Porsche in Russia deserves this treatment is just unfathomable. And, you know, Germany went along with it and the company went along with it, which is a shame. You know, I think you guys said it. You know, what I think about is, you know, maybe I should get that classic Ford pickup truck, the one that doesn't have any computers, that I can just, you know, fill with oil and gasoline and be on my way. But I think, you know, if you look at the future and all of the technology that's coming, you know, my desire is to go back. Let's go back 100 years. Let's go back to the cowboy era, you know, where I lived on a farm, and you know, we grew our own food, and we lived in nature. You know, I don't want the things that the future offers. And when we give up control over the most basic things, you know, think about the Internet of Things in your home, you know, your refrigerator, your AC unit, everything that can be controlled by the Internet can also be manipulated by someone else. So I think it's just a stark reminder that, you know, freedom is something you have to deliberately take, and it might require sacrifices. Instead of driving a brand new electric car, maybe you do look for something that's a little older, but you stay sovereign when you're using it.
Yeah, I love that. All righty, guys, we've got up next, sovereign wealth funds were buyers as Bitcoin plunged, says BlackRock's Larry Fink. This is an interesting one to me. I would have thought if sovereign wealth funds were buyers, at least in any significant level, that maybe the plunge would have been less. I don't know if you guys have opinions on manipulation in the market or any of that, but Greer, what do you think? I mean, is this like a strong signal to you, or you think this is probably being overblown?
You know, I think Larry would know. You know, we've seen record outflows from IBIT's ETF over the last month. And I think, you know, that he sees that traffic as well. So I believe this headline. You know, I don't know which wealth funds they are. And I also know that Bitcoin is so large that it requires a ton of money to move the price, a significant amount. So are they buying? Probably. I think everyone's buying. And of course, they're going to be buying when it's, you know, a 36% discount off the all-time high. You know, these people they're smart, they're well-connected. And, you know, they don't get shaken out like the regular pleb who, you know, buys at 110 and then sells at 87 because he's afraid. So I think that the key here is to know what you have. You know, you don't need, once you understand Bitcoin, you don't need to see headlines like this to reinforce your belief. Perhaps they help. But I think once you know what Bitcoin is and once you've studied it long enough, you know, this doesn't really surprise you. Yes, the people that have money are going to purchase Bitcoin, and they're going to do it when it's most advantageous for them. You know, this to me is just sort of a nothing burger. I think it's great. Yeah, more people should have Bitcoin, but I would love to see the regular Joes start building their stack.
Yeah, Adam.
Yeah, if you scroll down a little bit, was he talking about his? So he obviously runs an ETF, Bitcoin ETF. I think he's referring to sovereigns buying the ETF.
Yeah, I don't know that he would have the level of insight on spot Bitcoin. And I don't think most sovereign wealth funds probably feel it prudent to be buying spot. They're probably trying to figure out custody still.
Right. And so the reason why I point that out is because we just talked about, you know, Porsche and, you know, Russia and Germany turning off a bunch of cars. Well, these ETFs are essentially the Porsche of Bitcoin, right? It's Bitcoin with a switch. And people aren't learning. Like, you know, people didn't learn when the United States essentially seized all of Russia's you know, investments that they had in our treasuries, I believe it was back in the, you know, 2020, 2021, maybe, when we just seized all of their money. If there's a switch where a government can just turn you off, you know, that's not a safe place to keep your money. So I think that there's going to be a lot of F around and find out happening with all this. And, you know, with Porsche and also the Russian funds that were frozen or essentially stolen from the United States over the last few years, more and more people are, hopefully sovereign governments are going to realize that they need the real thing. And this is a good example to anybody. It's not just a government thing. You should buy real Bitcoin because you don't get the benefits of Bitcoin if you buy the ETF. So yeah, I'll leave it there.
All righty. Speaking of ETFs, the Kobayashi letter says crypto ETFs are making a comeback. Crypto funds recorded $1.1 billion in inflows last week, the largest in 7 weeks. So we're having a reversal. And, you know, hopefully for anyone who's a number go up maxi, this continues. But Adam, what do you think the signal is here? By the way, did you have a thesis on like what the dip was all about? We had our conversation about, I think, last week or a few days ago on Banter.
You know, there's a lot of short term games that can be played with any market. Certainly, Bitcoin's no exception to that. So I'm not going to make any major remarks about what I think the one factor was, you know, regarding the market conditions. And if I had to, I would just say the biggest factor is essentially the amount of liquidity that's in the system. So Bitcoin is just the most price or the most liquidity sensitive asset in the world. It trades 24/7. And anytime that there's a shift in liquidity, whether a lack thereof or a surplus of liquidity, it's going to just slosh around, you know, in all of these different markets. And some of it's going to end up in Bitcoin, some of it's not. And so when we see liquidity crunches, usually that's an indicator, or that's indicated by Bitcoin going down. And then the opposite is true as well, where there's, you know, liquidity inflows or liquidity surplus. And we see that in the Bitcoin price going up just because there's more money to be invested. So I think, you know, the fact that, you know, there's headlines such as crypto ETFs are making a comeback. I think this is just a kind of a cyclical thing. The other problem I see with this is a lot of people are equating the ETFs behavior as like centralized behavior, meaning that, like, you know, people see a headline that says, you know, BlackRock sold X billion dollars of Bitcoin over the last week, you know, during the dip. I think that that's just completely misguided, because what's really happening is it's their clients that are actually selling the Bitcoin. It's not BlackRock themselves necessarily. And so it's really important to distinguish between those two things, right? These ETFs aren't necessarily buying for themselves. They're, you know, retail investors, they are hedge funds, they are even maybe sovereign wealth funds, as we talked about just a moment ago. But these are individual actors making decisions collectively, not all together, if that makes sense. So I don't put too much stock into the ETF narrative of, you know, it's shifting something one way or another. I think that it's just kind of a good indicator to look at, a good metric to look at, that gives us some insight into what's happening across the board. But it's not, I don't think it's specific to ETFs.
Greer, you had an interesting quote tweet about Vanguard entering and allowing their clients to buy ETFs, crypto ETFs, that I thought was fascinating. You have any comment on Vanguard and what maybe that means for these numbers?
The ETFs to me are just, you know, the just a nonstop acquisition play for Bitcoin. And, you know, you look at the performance of them over the last 2 years since they launched, and they've acquired a significant amount of Bitcoin. I think 1 million Bitcoin. I could be wrong about that. But then you look at the available Bitcoin that exists on exchanges, the liquid Bitcoin that can be purchased, and it's somewhere around 3.3 million Bitcoin. So if you're feeling very bored with the price action, just think about 3 years from now, after each of these new ETFs, like Vanguard is $11 trillion in assets, think about a percentage of that going to Bitcoin over the next 3 years. Like, I feel like, you know, we're getting pretty close to the end game. Yes, it's a few years away, but I think, you know, what you stack today is going to be meaningfully more valuable before the end of this decade. You know, this is, like I said last time, this is the fat person at the buffet. They're eating all the food and they're leaving you the scraps. You know, you want to get a plate and you want to start getting some Bitcoin before the pressure and the price escapes and it's just too big.
Love the analogy. Alrighty, guys. Gary Cardone says that we are headed into an era of super cheap everything. And he is talking about peak consumption colliding with expanding technology. In the this was a quote tweet from basically Trump stripping some of these regulations related to car manufacturers and some really cool potential vehicles, trucks in particular, coming to the U.S. market and being much more competitively priced than current prices of, for example, a pickup truck. So I'm going to give you guys my thought first. I sort of expressed this offline and I want you guys to chime in on it. So I disagree that we're he threw in there the # deflation. So I want to sort of counter this. We are not moving in my view, to a deflationary environment. When you cut regulations, when you get government out of industries, prices can be reduced. But that is different than deflation. That is isolated to the given industry at hand. That's awesome. Just like you have supply chain problems that can increase prices, you can have more robust supply chains that reduce prices. It's not deflation. It's just lower prices in that particular moment. So if you have this, for example, this $10,000 truck that hits the US market, my anticipation would be, because of our fiat monetary system, which is inherently inflationary, next year, that $10,000 truck is going to be $11,000 and then $13,000 and so on and so forth. So while we might see lower prices in the short term when you deregulate, which is fantastic, it's not deflationary to me. Inflation, deflation, that's a discussion of the monetary supply, what's coming online, and that is going to continue to go up. And that's just part of what it means to have a debt-based monetary system. So I'll get off my soapbox. Adam, do you agree, disagree with me? Do you agree with any comment on what Gary said here?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's maybe a couple things to a couple different ways to look at this. Gary is obviously speaking from in terms of fiat. You know, when he says we are headed into an era of super cheap everything, he's saying like prices are coming down in dollar terms. You know, there's deflation going to happen with all the stuff going on. I agree with you, Michael. I don't think that that is in the realm of possibility. It's very unlikely, at least through this lens. There could be other factors or other events that cause some type of temporary deflation type of an event. But long-term, the amount of money in a system, I think, can only ever really go up. So I think that, you know, inflation is unavoidable. I don't think deflation is possible with the current structure we have for our monetary policy. I will say the second way to look at this is in terms of, you know, actual, you know, cost, especially as it relates to Bitcoin and Bitcoiners. So if you're debasing or if you're basing your money in your frame of reference for value through the lens of Bitcoin, I actually believe he's right. I think Bitcoiners, for Bitcoiners, you know, everything is going to get super cheap over time. We are going to experience deflation. And as anybody that's read Jeff Booth's book, The Price of Tomorrow, would understand, the natural state of the market is deflationary. So what's happening here is we have a product that is a really good product that has not been allowed in the United States. Some people have hypothesized that it's just simply because it would disrupt too much of our market in the auto industry. And, you know, I don't really care too much about that, whatever you want to think about that. But the point is, this is what technology does for us. Technology gives us better products at better pricing. And what the central bank system has done, it's taken that reward away from us through the economy. So I don't agree with Grant necessarily, but I think there is a way to break this down in which it makes sense.
Greer, what do you think?
You know, Americans need a win so bad. I agree with both of you guys. You know, I'd welcome cheaper prices. I think we all would. But I agree. I think it remains to be seen that AI reduces the cost of things, technology reducing the cost of things. But, you know, getting regulations out of government, you know, this was great. The CAFE standards being removed from cars. To me, that points to maybe we'll enter an era where we'll see artistry and true craftsmanship again. And maybe we won't have the bells and whistles that are completely unnecessary. Maybe you'll be able to pick and choose what you want your car features to be at a level that we haven't experienced yet. I think the headline here is that the government's getting out of the way of car production, and I welcome that.
I completely agree with that. Yeah, just to be clear, I am all for deregulation. I don't view it as deflation because a single industry might experience lower prices for a period of time. All righty, last up, guys, let's keep this short because we're about at time here, but we got a rag on Zcash. It's been all the rage with the influencers these days. So this account, Zcash Strategy, was contacted by none other than the Zcash Foundation, which should tell you everything you know about the nature of Zcash. He was very disappointed that funds are being used to fund $600 an hour lawyers because he's using the Zcash name and logo. Greer, let's have a laugh, man. What do you think about this?
Man, I really hope no plebs sold any of their Bitcoin to buy Zcash. You know, this is a typical crypto project. In my opinion, there's nothing special about it. There's nothing unique about it. You know, hopefully we all avoided this and we can just kind of laugh from the sidelines as this collapses into the ether.
But privacy, bro, come on. Adam, what do you think?
If your decentralized altcoin is suing you, your altcoin is not decentralized.
I think that's well said. Guys, that's a good place to wrap up. So buy Bitcoin, takes off custody, don't buy Zcash. Adam, why don't you give everyone a handoff? Tell people where to find you, learn more about Mana, everything else you're working on.
I'm at Adam Semeca on X if you want to follow me. Also run a Bitcoin payments platform and wallet called Mana. We're at Mana Bitcoin on X as well.
Hey, Greer, why don't you tell people about BirdFlip? I feel like I haven't given you that chance lately.
Oh, yeah, I appreciate that. You can get low OPSEC gear for Bitcoiners at shopbirdflip.com. You can pay in dollars. You can pay in Bitcoin. And got the classic BirdFlip trucker hat.
We got some good gear here, guys. Make sure you get your gear from BirdFlip. And for everyone who's listening, thank you so much for being here. Stick around for another minute. Learn a bit about the Bitcoin way, how we can help you. Thank you again for tuning in. Gents, it's been a pleasure. I look forward to catching up with both of you soon.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate having me. Take care. Bye.
Hey there. Thank you for tuning into Bitcoin Banter. Wanted to take a quick minute to remind you to head on over to the bitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a free 30-minute consultation with a member of our team. It is critical that you take full control of your wealth, and we can equip you with the skills needed to take 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. For our existing clients, we also offer our Bitcoin Bootcamp, where we will conduct quarterly calls with you to reinforce the training we've provided and fill any gaps in your knowledge. While you're at it, ask about our solo mining service, something we think everybody should be doing. We also help with addressing your personal and online cybersecurity, and we can even help you set up a privacy phone free of big tech and Big Brother surveillance. Don't underestimate the amount of tracking taking place in your browser and in the apps you use every day. And finally, whether you're ready to make a move to a freedom-loving paradise or want a backup in the event of a worst-case scenario, be sure to ask about our Plan B residency program. Being untethered from a single location is one of the best ways to ensure your self-sovereignty into the future. Again, you can schedule a free consultation at thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you are enjoying the show, please do me a favor, subscribe to our channel wherever you listen, give us a 5-star review, and drop us a comment. We would really appreciate it, and it makes it easier for others to begin finding us as we preach the gospel of financial self-sovereignty and beyond. Thank you again for listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.